Hello, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 4 of the GRK Podcast. It's the Switch Special. With me are some of the forum's biggest Nintendo fans, Pete Peds, James Kicks, Chris Cuttooth, and Shanker SD64.
Hello, good evening.
Hi.
Hello.
So, this morning at 4 o'clock, I had stayed up and I watched the Nintendo presentation live. And I thought it was a mixed bag. I wasn't blown away by it, but there were moments in it which were good. And what I tried to do was kind of take some notes. And I've kind of ranked them from, the stuff I thought was pretty good to the stuff I found kind of disappointing. First off, that Zelda trailer was absolutely immense.
I couldn't believe my eyes and ears. That was just fantastic. I mean, the conference itself, I had it highs and lows, but there's no question that the trailer is just one of the best ever. I mean, you just see it and think it's could be a great movie, it's going to be a great game, it's a great experience. You just want to, we've seen footage before, but this is the one that made me want the game as soon as possible the most, as in it left me thinking this is better than I could have imagined, and it was already one of my most anticipated titles. So I'm really looking forward to this even more than before, and I didn't think that I could. But yeah, a fantastic ending, really. It's just, and there's so many new things that we saw, at least that I hadn't seen, and the quality of the game looked better. Like, I had the trailer running full screen on my laptop, and whereas when I run previous footage like that, it looked a bit blurry because of the lower resolution. This looked really clear, and the frame rate was smooth. So whether it's a vertical slice or that's actual gameplay, we don't know, but it's very reassuring and exciting.
The thing I was most impressed by was the fact they didn't show too much of the story, obviously, to not spoil anything, but until now they've sort of kept quiet on all the story details or whatever. So there's so many different ways you can look at where the story could be going. Like, one of the theories I've seen today is that this is actually the Hero of Time, and he was sealed away after Ocarina of Time for 100 years, and that's why Ganon came back and basically destroyed everything again. And it's like one of the theories
that
is that it follows
sense, though. Hyrule gets flooded in that timeline.
No, but this is only 100 years after Peds. That was supposed to have happened ages ago.
Yeah, but I thought the Wind Waker storyline was where he never came back. Ganon ruled.
Yeah, but could you imagine if this game ended with you flooding Hyrule? That'd be crazy.
But it wouldn't make sense, because
came
back.
No, that wouldn't make sense. No, but, I mean, that's just one of the theories that people are coming out with. Obviously,
that's cool that people are coming up with theories, but
nothing's
I don't think
confirmed
that would
until
stick.
The game's
but
in
But it does
hands.
Seem, like, interesting, because it does mention they... It's like, I don't know what it said exactly, but it's like, we sealed you away for 100... Oh, you don't recognize me. Let me tell you what happened in the last 100 years.
Yeah, that was the other link people were making. Maybe that is the Deku Sprout from Ocarina of Time, the one you replant, or the one that replants itself. That'd be cool anyway. But
there was one of those Kokiri or whatever from Wind Waker in the footage
in
the forest.
Yeah, it was flying around, wasn't it? Just hovering. That was cool. I love the look of the Zoras now as well. They're red, but that was a thing in Twilight Princess as well for the royal family or whatever. But like, they just look really cool now. And I really can't wait to just sort of explore where they live and stuff like that. It'll be really cool.
I can't believe that there's like full voice acting in this, or it seems like.
There certainly was in the trailer.
It may be
like there's other certain, especially RPGs, like some of the bits will be voiced and then everything else will just be text, but to be honest, I don't really mind. As long as Link never speaks, I'm fine.
I think that he does.
No, he doesn't.
He comes out and goes, "Hey, yo, what's up, bro?"
No, let's not go down Sunset Overdrive's route. We've had enough of that.
Good game, that, dude.
Yeah, I'm with Trellis on this. It tries too hard.
For me, what I found really delightful about the trailer was that from the gameplay footage we've seen so far, we know that this new Zelda's gonna have some great new gameplay mechanics. People are excited about that. We know it's gonna have like this huge world to explore. People are very excited about that. But I think some people were left wondering, what do you kind of do in this world with these mechanics? Is it gonna be enough to do to kind of hook us in? And that kind of very story focused. Kind of cinematic trailer. I think it just instantly convinced me that there was going to be a lot of reason to kind of explore this world. You saw towns. You saw like a whole kind of rich cast of characters, different races, you know, different kind of peoples within the world, different kind of, you know, just flashes of like different kind of plot points developing. And for me, it just like convinced me that this New Zelda is going to have that like final component that's going to make this probably one of the best Zelda experiences that we've ever had.
It's probably the most Zelda trailer has done that since that like epic Twilight Princess, you know, that first one.
Yeah.
Everyone like went crazy
about the E3 one with like horseback exactly. archery.
And, where Miyamoto like, comes out with a goddamn sword and shield. Like that sort of moment. Okay, maybe it wasn't like everyone looked hollow or anything like that, but it just looked like, whoa, this actually looks like what I know, but in a way that seems a lot more, I wouldn't say mature, that's not the best word for it, but a lot more sort of like
kind of developed,
yes,
in a way, yeah.
As an evolution of Zelda in a way that actually looks good rather than just doing the same thing over and over with some kind of weird thing attached to it and not really think of, you know, we've got this thing that's, what, 25, 30 years old. Where can we actually go with this? Not just go, well, this is what people expect, let's just give them more of the same.
Which is ironic, considering, if anything, the gameplay looks like it's going back to more like Zelda 1. That it's going back while going forward. There was another game where the tagline for it was to go forward, we go back. Oh, Sonic Mania. Yeah, it's a similar thing, but it's the gameplay that seems like more open world. You can do whatever you want in whatever order, from what I understand. There's obviously a lot more to it this time. Like, you have the clothing, the food system and everything like that, but it's kind of funny how it's happened.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Zelda kind of, it is definitely, I think, become slightly more linear, from Zelda 1 to A Link to the Past to, like, Ocarina of Time. Maybe that progression kind of illustrates it. So to kind of rediscover that kind of, early game in the series kind of sense of moving about kind of a world more freely is definitely like kind of a nod to the series' like very early roots. And I mentioned on kind of episode 3 of the podcast that A Link Between Worlds seemed like it was kind of testing the waters for this.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Mm.
Maybe.
Because A Link Between Worlds had this system where you could kind of, you had like slightly more freedom than you usually did in a Zelda game. You could kind of get the items that you wanted in the order that you wanted, then kind of, there wasn't such a prescribed way to kind of tackle the dungeons. And I wonder whether that was Nintendo kind of almost seeing, well, you know, does this idea really work in a Zelda game? You know, if this kind of works out, we can then take it to like the next level in our next big like home console Zelda game. I wonder if it was like a conscious choice. I guess we'll never know, but you know, it seems plausible to me that it was like a deliberate process of, okay, we'll kind of test out this idea on our kind of handheld version, which can be kind of more experimental. Then, you know, for if it works out for the big hitter, you know, if people like it, we'll go for it with Breath of the Wild.
I did read in an interview with Anuma, the director of the Zelda series, that, or producer, whatever he is, anyway, that the handheld games, so like in this instance, A Link Between Worlds, are kind of like experiments for the home console versions. And that means that, so I actually agree with you, and I do think that the idea of tackling the dungeons in any way, or giving the player the choice of how to progress through the game, as opposed to funneling him or her through a pretty much set path, was an experiment in A Link Between Worlds, and it was seen as successful, so it's been brought to Breath of the Wild. That's the most recent example we have, at least. I'm sure there are others if we look at games like Phantom Hourglass, the Oracle games, Link's Awakening, even Minish Cap.
Well, that's also the same with like Mario. You had 3D land and a 3D world.
Yeah, so it's just not yet a progression. You've got the smaller one to test out ideas, and then just develop them on the home console with more power and more scope.
See, I think a lot of that was because you had the DS with two screens, but then the Wii U, they basically just made a big DS. So I think that allowed them to do that in a way that maybe they just weren't able to with, say, the Game Boy to the N64 to the GameCube, because of that complete because of the leap from that handheld device to what a console could do was so great for both of them, whereas with a DS being able to handle sort of big 3D games reasonably well to a Wii or Wii U being able to do the same, that sort of leap has got smaller and smaller, and I think that's obviously why they've gone down this Switch route.
Absolutely, and one of the things I really do strongly agree with from Nintendo's strategy is this idea of, let's kind of merge these lines. You know, I know it's not 100% confirmed that they're viewing the Switch as a 3DS successor, but certainly, I mean, if it does take off and sell well, I can't imagine them not considering it the successor to both the home console and the handheld lines. And it makes sense, because what a handheld is capable of, you know, catches up generation on generation with what a home console is capable of and will continue to do so. So I think eventually the distinction will kind of inevitably be lost. And I think now is a good kind of jumping on point for having this kind of merged experience.
Well, the interesting thing is today, especially during the Treehouse stream, they refer to it as a home console quite a lot. Now, maybe that doesn't confirm anything, but they still use the term home console, so...
Well, half of it is a home console. Or at least it's half... Well, you know what I mean. Anyway, it is in part a home console. That's kind of the point of it, to both. You dock it and you play it on your TV at home on the comfy couch or your office chair, what have you. And then when you're done, you have to go out, you pick it up, take it with you and play it on the train or the bus or, you know, during lunch or something. It's both in one. Mm. But, I mean, I didn't see the Treehouse. I don't know how heavily it was referred to as home console or if it was equally referred to as a handheld. But,
yeah, it wasn't.
It's both. So it's just home console. All right, that is interesting, but it can be both.
It's a hybrid. That's the easiest way of putting it. But I think in the end, they want people to think of it as primarily a home console, which is what I gathered from today, anyway.
It is primarily a handheld, which you dock, like, you know? It is more handheld than it is home console, isn't it?
I think that it works better as a handheld that you can dock, because it's kind of like... As a home console that's portable, you feel like it's limited by being portable, but whereas a handheld that can be docked, you feel that it's a handheld, but... One that can get a bit more power, like,
well,
running
harder. Be that
you've just described a lot of the hyperbole that came out of today on the internet. Well done, Dragon.
Hey, like I said, I was doing better things. but yeah, whichever way you describe it, it does both. But it is interesting and kind of strange to see Nintendo calling it, well, many referring to it as a home console, when the last generation showed that its strength lay with handheld, especially in Japan. So I'd have thought it would be favoring the handheld side of it, but also saying, you know, you can also play it at home.
It's mainly because I don't think they're done with the 3DS yet. So that's probably why they're not saying this is our success to a handheld, because the 3DS is still doing really well.
That's a good point.
Mario Maker in Japan is selling really well on 3DS at the moment, so...
Speaking of Mario Maker, you guys should just play it for and buy it for those single player levels. They're really fun. Like, oh my god.
The challenge mode or whatever it's called.
The challenge mode, yeah, it's really been underrepresented. As stupid as it is not to be able to share levels online, that is pretty much worth buying. Yeah, you can't like upload them yourself. You have to share them by Street Pass, and you can only download them by playing the 100 Mario challenge.
Yeah.
This is Nintendo's approach to online in a nutshell, I think. But we'll probably get to that later. So Zelda was part of a pair of extremely exciting trailers for me, and the other was, of course, the new Mario Odyssey. What did we think of that trailer and the return to a perhaps more Mario 64-like experience?
At first, when they first started, and they showed like the New York City, and then Mario with normal people, I was like, okay, it doesn't fit. It really doesn't fit. It's like Sonic Adventure all over again. And I was worried about it. But then seeing the gameplay and the other worlds, I was interested again. But I'm not a big fan of the city thing with the normal people. It's not right, and it shouldn't be there.
So I think, to be fair, the city thing, it strikes me as like one of like many worlds, and if you see in the background, it has like your references, like kind of Donk City, that kind of thing. I think it's
just the funny thing.
Yeah, I know, it's great, and I think it is intended to be kind of funny. But did you not get that kind of vibe from it, Pete? Did it just kind of creep you out? You didn't find it very amusing?
No, I didn't find it amusing. I thought it was just like really jarring. The two styles didn't go together. Like I said, it was like Sonic Adventure all thing over is, again, Pete, or Sonic 06. Now, Sonic 06 was a terrible, terrible game. I don't want to be looking at Mario and thinking, that's going to be like Sonic 06.
I didn't really get that Sonic vibe from it when I saw it. I actually thought that it looked cool, and I liked the way that Mario was using the city to execute his traditional moves. Like, he was wall-kicking between buildings, and he has his new move where he swings off a lamppost. So I thought that it was a great way of adapting Super Mario to the city, and him among humans and taxis didn't look jarring. It just looked fun. Like, yep. I'd love to do this in London or New York.
The way I watched like the Switch sort of videos and everything, I woke up like at 3:30, not actually intending to watch anything. I just woke up in the night and I checked Twitter, and I saw like a lot of the information come out, like you know, the price and some images about what Mario was and what the Zelda trailer was and everything like that. And a lot of like the disappointment stuff, where I just looked at my phone and thought, oh, it's just another disappointing night. Like, I'm expecting something. It's happening in the middle of the night, and I look at my phone and the bad things happened, and I go back to sleep. But the only image of Mario that I saw was the city stuff, and I thought, this looks just so bizarre. It just seemed to sort of fit in with all the other, I think, disappointing stuff that seemed to be coming out about this event. But then I watched the actual sort of trailer for it separately, and I thought, even the city stuff, I thought this game looks brilliant. Like, it just it excites me more than even seeing Galaxy, like either Galaxy game. It just looks like exactly what I have wanted for a Mario game for a really long time, for 20 years basically, since Mario 64, where you've got that just arena, almost playground, just to find stuff, just to do different things, in rather than what has happened in the past few Mario games, where it's just sort of, well, you can't, it could well be a little bit more linear, but it seems that it's this big open level, open map gameplay.
They did a new section on the new Mario game. They didn't actually show any more footage, but Miyamoto had an interview. One of the things he mentioned was Mario Galaxy being the way it was they got a lot of feedback saying the camera controls in Mario Sunshine were a bit too difficult to grasp. So when they went to Mario Galaxy, the reason why the camera control is very limited, and also even the fact you're on a planet, so the camera revolves around you all the time, they said that was why they went for that sort of style in the end, because they thought it'd be easier for people. Which is just, like, it's really interesting to find out that's part of the reason why they ended up making a game like Galaxy, because, I mean, I love Galaxy. If anything, I prefer it to Mario 64, but, I mean, Mario 64 is brilliant, don't get me wrong, but it's just the whole idea that because they got so much feedback of someone finding something too difficult, they decided to use that to make a game like Galaxy, which is just... I just find that really astonishing, because it's like, I mean, they may have come up with an idea like Galaxy anyway, but if the idea for Galaxy came about because of camera control problems, then in a way I'm kind of happy that people did have trouble with the camera. Because it means now, he said as well that what part of the reason why it's been delayed to Christmas is they're trying to get the camera controls perfect. Because at the moment the camera controls are sort of a mix between Galaxy and Sunshine, so it'll be really interesting to see what they're like in the final product.
I think the biggest disappointment is that it is not coming out at launch. Because I had hyped myself up for that eventuality, and it actually is, oh no, basically another year away. It's a bit,
The way I view it is, at launch, I'm going to be playing a lot of Zelda. So, if anything, I'm glad. I can understand why people want it at launch. I mean, that's fine. But the only reason why people were thinking it was going to be anywhere near launch was because stupid rumors of people that were completely wrong. So at the end of the day, I wasn't expecting Mario at any point. I was just expecting it to come when it was going to come. And it just so happens that turned out to be the end of this year. And it means I get to play a really cool game over Christmas, so I don't mind.
You are right, though. It's because of the rumors that people are disappointed when it's being released. Everyone expected these rumors to be true, and of course they weren't. So, you know.
Well, I think you'd be disappointed regardless because the launch lineup is abysmal.
Well, hopefully, by the time it comes out, there'll be more information on there'll be more of a launch lineup than what it is. But you know, one can hope.
See, personally, I don't mind because, like James, I just care about playing Zelda, and I'm happy enough with just that because I don't really get time to play more than one game.
See, the only problem I would say with that is people who've got a Wii U don't need Zelda to jump aboard the Switch. They can get that on the Wii U.
Yeah, which is Nintendo's
biggest concern for Nintendo. Obviously, yeah, for us, we don't care. But for Nintendo, what's making them people buy a Switch instead of Zelda on the Wii U if they've got it?
You need to think the other way around. It's more the people that didn't buy a Wii U, or those people who just have a 3DS or who have neither, who have seen Zelda and think, I want to buy that, I want to play that. Those people can now think, okay, I can get this console and get Zelda, eventually get Splatoon, eventually get this great Mario Kart game that I missed, and play, and then play this fantastic Super Mario game. Now, I agree that the whole year could do with a bit more padding, but as far as the launch is concerned, personally, I don't mind because I'll be more than busy with just Zelda. That being said, historically, as fantastic as the Zelda games have been, they've not been the biggest sellers, even on the Wii U, which had a Wii, which had a huge launch. Twilight Princess wasn't the biggest seller, even if you discount
Wii Sports.
Yes, even if you discount Wii Sports. There were other games like New Super Mario Brothers and Smash Bros. And Mario Kart that outsold Twilight Princess a lot, even if you add the GameCube sales to the Wii sales. So that's why I personally I don't care that Zelda is the biggest title coming out or the only title of that caliber on launch, but I still do feel the launch should have maybe one other game to diversify its appeal, and Mario Kart could have been that. It's a shame that it's coming out a month later, because even that 1 month makes it really does have an impact on what the launch looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're probably going to go into this later. I guess we'll probably talk maybe at the end of what we're actually, like, if we are going to get it at launch, and if we are, what we're going to plan to get. But the big thing with me is, I mean, I guess in a way it's not really my problem, because, I mean, I was probably going to end up buying this anyway, being all honest. But, like, I'm in a position where I'm a person who plays a lot of games anyway, so I have my PS4, I've got my PC that I sit on pretty much every single day, and with the launch for me, while yes, it is somewhat disappointing, there's at least three games I've seen that I want to play, and also that month, Nier Automata comes out, and that is like this massive JRPG. I'm playing 3 Yakuza 6 at the moment, and but I barely get any time to play games anymore as well, so even though there's so few games at launch, I know eventually my purchase is going to pay off for me. So, like, the launch lineup to me is inconsequential most of the time, because it's not like this is the only thing I'll be playing. Now, if I had no other consoles and I looked at the Switch's launch lineup, I'd perhaps think, you know what, maybe I'll hold off and wait. And that's what I've seen a lot of people on the forum are going to do, which is completely fair, and I completely understand it. I just hope in a way that Nintendo have something planned for that, because, I mean, if you think about it at the moment, but the way we're looking at the launch, you have the games at the start, then a month later or so you have Mario Kart, then most likely a couple of months after that you've got Splatoon, and then at the end of the year you've got a game we're talking about, which is Mario. So to me, as someone who doesn't have much time to play games and is going to get the console, that is quite exciting to me, because that's at least 3 or 4 big games in the year that I want to play, and I'm probably going to play quite a lot of. So that's the way I view it anyway. But yeah, Mario, it just looks astonishing. Like, the vegetable world looks incredibly colourful. When I looked at 3D World, when they first showed it off, I thought, this is pretty colourful. And then I didn't get it at launch, so I played it a while later. I only played it for the first time last year. And I thought, wow, this game is so colourful, it's beautiful. And then this trailer, somehow they've managed to make it even more colourful. It just looks beautiful. Yeah, it's a bit jaggy, but that doesn't matter when it looks like the art style's so good.
So going back to the trailer, when I saw it, I didn't even pick up on the fact that it was more of an open world like Super Mario 64 until it was actually mentioned. To me, it just looked like more 3D world, and I love 3D world, so I was quite happy with that. It, for me, it was really hard to gauge that there's this big world to explore. I mean, I know that it was set in a city, but nothing there said, yeah, you can go anywhere, and instead of just falling into the abyss. Nonetheless, it looked great because it looked exciting and fun, and after 3D World, I'm confident that a new Mario game will have just as good, if not better, level design. Seeing what Mario was doing in the game, jumping around, swinging from lampposts, exploring new areas, even especially I love that bit where he's in the forest and he's walking through the air and the path of petals just forms at his feet. It just looked fantastic. So even something like another 3D world with its fixed camera would have been great for me. I'm definitely excited for this.
The thing I'm most excited about with this Mario is they've shown off what they have. I know they've said it's going to be more like Mario 64 and Sunshine, so it makes me wonder if there's maybe going to be not as many sort of levels, as it were, as like Galaxy or 3D World had. But even if there isn't, what they've shown so far, it makes me super excited to find out what else they've still not shown, and I just can't wait to get my hands on it and explore all these like colourful landscapes.
Absolutely, there's an immense imagination at play there. You know, the different worlds that they showed were so unique. I would definitely agree with that. I was left wondering too, like, yeah, you know, I want to see every level that this game has to offer, because, you know, they've shown these ones off, but I bet there are half a dozen more which are just as crazy and wonderful.
Well, the rumour was, wasn't it, that they were basing the game on real-life locations, and with New Donk City, they are basing at least on New York, so I wonder what other places in the world they based it on, like, I wonder what, like, snowy levels are going to be in there and stuff like that.
There's your classic Egyptian level, isn't there?
Yeah. With the tiger, sphinx thing.
I just hope that there's a lot of variation in the levels. As much as I love Super Mario 64, I did feel that revisiting the same world for a slightly different style got kind of tiresome. Whereas at least with the Super Mario 3D World, you'd have bigger variation, so you weren't always going back to the same place to do very similar things. So hopefully they're not like seven or eight stars in one world, maybe three or four, and just more worlds.
Sure. So we mentioned there very briefly the launch period stuff. And one game which is part of the launch period, although it won't quite be out at launch, but it's out kind of, you know, soon after launch, is ARMS. And ARMS is Nintendo's latest kind of approach to the fighting game genre. And when I saw the trailer initially of ARMS, I went through kind of two very kind of distinct emotions. There was like immense negativity at the start, where I thought, oh Christ, this is just Wii Sports Boxing. They've lost the plot. They've just made Wii Sports Boxing into its own game, and they're trying to sell it. What is going on? But then I started noticing some of the mechanics that they were showing off weren't as kind of as basic as you'd expect from a kind of Wii Sports Boxing ripoff. And I kind of remembered thinking to myself, oh, you actually, I think a lot of people are going to interpret this as Wii Sports Boxing, but actually it looks like it might be deeper. It looks like it might be a decent fighting game. And I didn't know at the time, but they then immediately started the Treehouse afterwards. And I noticed on the forum people talking, oh, they're showing ARMS and it's actually really good. And I tuned in for some of that footage. And it confirmed to me that ARMS looked like it could have the potential to be a really good experience. So I was wondering if anyone here watched that Treehouse footage or what their impressions of ARMS from the trailer was, and kind of, you know, has that changed? What do we think about ARMS?
I think it looked more interesting than 1-2 Switch that was shown before, but it didn't look very interesting. I didn't see the Treehouse stuff, so I can't judge on the extra footage. But what was shown, I thought it looked quite dull. Very colourful and stuff, but quite dull in gameplay.
So, did you make that kind of connection while you were watching it to, I kept going back to Wii Sports Boxing because it just looked so much like Wii Sports Boxing, but with kind of zanier characters and kind of longer arms, right? Is that the kind of vibe you got from it, Peter?
Yeah, it did kind of give me the Wii Boxing vibe, which I actually quite enjoyed Wii Boxing. But with it being a packing game and it being something short and fun, you play with your friends, something that you're going to pay 40, 50 quid for, just, it really doesn't appeal to me, like.
Mm. So what they did in the Treehouse was, I mean, I get the impression they essentially realised, like, oh, people are going to think that it's a worse game than it actually is. And they kind of, the Treehouse kind of people kind of, while they were playing it, they went through the mechanics in the game and kind of illustrated how they were similar to kind of proper fighting game mechanics. So you had all of the, like, basic moves and actions of your fighting game, and they interacted in the same way that they would in kind of Street Fighter, and you even had kind of super moves and combos. And I wonder, I know you haven't seen the footage, but does that kind of change your impression of it to hear that? Or do you think that there just wasn't enough to the game to even convince you, even if it turns out to be a little deeper than the initial trailer showed?
It doesn't seem like there'd be enough for the game to warrant the cost more than anything. Right, also, okay. It did look a bit dull. If the game was something like 15, 20 quid, I'd consider it, because I like spending money on games more than anything. But I don't know. It just didn't seem like it appeal. Like, it's not like a friend who will come around regularly and have a punch up with me. So it'd be kind of boring, you know, just playing against the computer. So it exposes the way I could beat my kids.
But what if it has online play? Because to me, this is one of the reasons I really liked Wii Sports Club on the Wii U. I really liked boxing, and you could play that online. And it's just a shame that there weren't more people playing. So if this has on, I mean, I like the look of the trailer, and to hear that people were more convinced by the Treehouse makes me even more interested in this. So I'll be looking to pick it up. And if it has online, I really hope that more people do pick it up so that I can play against them.
Well, I'll definitely be playing, so we can have a few matches. And so James, I know you did watch the Treehouse, so I was interested to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, I mean, first of all, when they showed it off on the presentation video, I was watching that when I first woke up this morning. I thought Arms looked really good anyway. Like, I knew, like, in the video they were saying it was going to be, like, there was going to be a lot of depth. But from what I saw anyway, I thought it looked really good. I mean, I did see a lot of people online say, oh, it looks really bad, what the hell are they doing? And then I know, as you've said, people have changed their mind after the Treehouse stuff, but for me, it just reinforced what I already thought. Because when I was watching the Treehouse stuff, yeah, they showed off more of the stages you can fight on, they showed off more of the characters and how it worked, and they sort of explained it all a little bit more in detail. But I was excited anyway, and I think, if anything, this is going to be the IP for the Switch, what Splatoon was for the Wii U, because it's simple, but it's complex. And that sounds really stupid, but it's got a lot of depth to it, and it's online multiplayer, it's also local multiplayer, and it wouldn't surprise me if we saw this as some kind of esport in a way, because what you can do in that game looks incredibly interesting. It's like Punch Out on acid, in a way.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Certainly with the comparison to, like, Splatoon, I think it wasn't immediately obvious that Splatoon was going to be as deep as it is. I don't own a Wii U, but I'm lucky enough to have a friend that does, and I've played a bit of Splatoon, and I thought it was really great. But I think you're just kind of looking at a glance of someone playing the game, it's not, you know, immediately obvious that it is this kind of, you know, quite deep kind of tactics based shooter. And I think the same may well be true of Arms, that it's something that's, like, very simple to, like, pick up and play, very simple to kind of explain, but actually that there may well be a lot of kind of fighting game tactics and fighting game strategy that go into kind of getting good at that game. And I was talking about the presentation to a friend of mine, and he raised the idea of having Arms at Evo and kind of fighting game tournaments. And yeah, I think it could happen. I mean, you already get Smash Bros. At tournaments like that. And I think Arms might be something that they do pick up.
The big thing is, JC, who's one of the Treehouse guys, made a really important point where he's been playing it a lot. And he was trying to reconfirm constantly, like, how deep it is. And they did go over that. I mean, the fighting system is very similar to any other fighting game. So you can block, you can attack, and you can dodge. And the system works much like any other one where you can also throw as well. So blocking beats attacking, but then throwing beats blocking. And then throwing gets beaten by attacking, So there is a whole rock, paper, scissors thing, which, while sounds simple, when it's put into practice, especially when you have, like, they've only shown off six characters so far. They've not said if there's going to be any more or not, but I imagine there will be. And all of the characters have their own, unique gimmick, and they all have their own special weapons. Like the mummy guy, and I can't believe I've forgotten his name already. One of his things is like a punch that fires out three punches. So to beat him, he's very slow, so he moves really slowly, so his dodging isn't very good, but his attacking is really powerful. And to beat his, to dodge his attacks, you have to play completely differently to if you're playing against Ribbon Girl, because especially that one weapon, it makes you think about what you're doing. It's not easy to just go, okay, so I know how to dodge now, I know how to beat every character. Because there's a lot more depth to it than that with all the sort of special abilities and things. And you can even heal as well. I didn't catch how you did that because I missed that point. But apparently you can use your flurry meter to actually heal yourself as well. So that's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely, and that kind of combination of rock, paper, scissors gameplay mechanics with the importance of movement, characters having their own special kind of abilities or quirks, and then kind of managing like a kind of super meter. Those are the mechanics of Street Fighter. So I see no reason why ARMS couldn't be something approaching that level of kind of depth or competitiveness. I don't think. I don't think Nintendo have much interest in making a game that has, ridiculous kind of one-frame links in. I would be very surprised if that kind of highly kind of mechanical combo were in there. But in terms of, it being an interesting game to kind of play tactically, I think there could be similarities with games like Street Fighter there. Okay. So the next game I wanted to talk about was the next games, rather, were two big JRPGs which were announced for the Switch. Now, I think the one of the Switch's strengths is going to be getting these kind of more Japan-centric experiences onto one platform, and that's something I'm looking forward to. I think it'll be interesting to have that on a console. So the two big JRPGs were Xenoblade Chronicles 2 and Project Octopath Traveler, which I think is the greatest code name for anything of all time. And Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is a sequel to Xenoblade Chronicles, obviously, but Project Octopath Traveler is a spiritual successor to Bravely Default. I've never played a Xenoblade game, but I am a huge Bravely Default fan.
I disagree that it's a spiritual successor, but that's fine.
Okay, no, that's okay, James. I think it is, because I think it's developed by the same people and it's kind of in the same vein as. But what do you think? What do you think of what we've seen so far, Project Octopath Traveler?
Well, I think it looks really interesting. I was the person who made the thread about it on G Arcade as well, because no one else seemed to want to make one. The screenshots look amazing, the art style is really cool, it's got a sort of modern pixel art style to it, and they've not shown too much, so I can't go into too much detail, but it looks like it's got a very traditional battle system as well, which is cool. So, I mean, the only reason why I don't think it's a spiritual successor is while it is in the same vein as it's a JRPG by the same team, I don't think you'll be able to really link them because they even just the way they looks so different. The art style is just completely changed.
So for me, I completely see what you're saying, and I won't quibble about that. But just to explain my thought process, for me, what kind of linked them and what made me think that they had similar vibes were two things. One, that they both, yes, the art styles are different, but they both had this kind of very unique kind of 2D meets 3D kind of effect going on. Do you see what I mean by that? Because Bravely Default looked kind of like almost like paintings on paper, but like rendered
Yeah,
in like a 3D
okay,
layered way.
I can get
Yeah,
you.
and you have
Oh
that
my
same
God,
thing with
that's
pixel art.
it.
Yeah.
I was wondering why it looks so fascinating. It's like Paper Mario, and I love the way the
I got that
shadows fall
vibe.
in the background.
Yeah.
It's like a it's like a paper play kind of thing come to life.
Yeah.
It looks incredible. And yeah, I do want to just go back to that combo point James said. I love how it looks like it's turn-based, because one thing I miss about Final Fantasy games is how they've gone from turn-based to this like quasi-action MMORPG combat system, which yeah, is a shame. But as you were saying, Carl.
And the second reason was the concept art just looked extremely Bravely Default concept art, right?
Probably yeah, it's the same artist.
Same artist. So yeah, but that's probably a less deep connection. But certainly, yeah. I mean, I completely agree. This kind of absolutely beautiful presentation of this kind of 2D planes, but rendered in that layered 3D way. I mean, that was one of my favorite parts about Bravely Default, and it's part of the reason why I really like Paper Mario. And yeah, I got that same vibe from it. I just thought it was really nice to look at, and I'm pretty excited to give it a go.
Seeing JRPGs on the Switch is another it's another reason why I like the idea of the Switch, because growing up, JRPGs were one of my favorite genres, what RPGs were, and then I did particularly like JRPGs like Pokemon and the Tales series, but as I get older, I had less time to play games, and so I've got all these JRPGs I want to play, but hardly any time to sit down and play them. But having something like this on the Switch means that I can play it on the go when I'm out, and then continue playing it when I'm home on the TV or on my monitor, because sometimes I feel that I could keep playing what I'm playing on my 3DS, but then I'm home, I should take advantage of the bigger screen and play something else. And I have wished that there was a way to kind of just connect my 3DS to the TV. And this is why I love seeing RPGs like this on the Switch, because it means that I'm more likely to play it and finish it. And then I can enjoy it even more because I can play it on either a big TV or with the actual handheld screen.
The other plus point, from what I understand, but I don't know if this is true, but that this is what I gathered from the presentation and the Treehouse stuff, I think it charges by USB-C. So you should just be able to charge it on the go as well with a USB charger. Like, I've got one for my phone, and it's got a lot of charge in it normally. Like, it lasts hours and hours and hours, so if I'm ever going for like a long train journey or something, I can just take that with me. And as long as I'm correct, I know the Joy-Cons charge by being connected to the Switch, so you don't need to worry about those, and you'll just have one thing charging the whole thing, and that'll be really cool. I don't know if this is actually what's going to happen, but I hope it is, because that'll be nice.
Well, it does use USB-C, so yeah, I think that it will happen. And yeah, you're right, this is another thing. Like, I have found that I need to make sure that my DS is charged, because I keep a portable battery pack with me, but I only have one cable, which is the micro USB one, because I haven't managed to recharge my phone. So having one that I can share between my phone and the Switch will be great.
Xenoblade looks really good as well. I didn't play the original, but I need to play it.
I love the original. Yeah, I wish I played more of the sequel.
I've never finished the original Xenoblade, and I haven't started the second one because I want to finish the first one first, even though there's not really much connecting them, so it shouldn't make a difference.
But nothing
Xenoblade 2, I'm just like, just stick it straight in my veins, man, because I fucking love Xenoblade. I'm not a massive JRPG fan, but for some reason, Xenoblade, just like Final Fantasy VI, it's just like, these are fucking top tier of their class. They're so good that they stand out from their class and take people like me who don't like that style of game very much and love them.
Yeah, you're right there. I mean, I played a few JRPGs and kind of came out of it, but Xenoblade really caught my attention when I thought, you know, I'll start loads of JRPGs and eventually lose interest, but 90 hours in, I still want to go back to finish it. It's fantastic. So as soon as I saw Monolith Soft, I was excited, and then seeing this turn into another Xenoblade and it being a sequel to Chronicles, which is one of my favorite games, it was incredible.
Yeah, the one thing that, like, I mean, I've not played them, I know they're really good. I feel really bad because in Secret Santa last year someone got me Xenoblade Chronicles X, but I can't play it because I don't have a European Wii U. I still have it, it's still over there. But one of the things that I've always noticed about Xenoblade, and I know I've seen online that some people are a bit disappointed about this, but the models for the characters, especially in Chronicles X, like, they're good, but they're kind of weird, whereas they've gone for a lot... I guess it's more a traditional style now with the models for Xenoblade 2, and I actually think they look really cool, but...
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, oh, they're too anime, but that's just people being stupid, basically.
Case of it to anime, as long as the fucking gameplay is good. Jesus, people in this world need to get a grip.
That massive dragon thing, oh my god. Like, when it just comes out the clouds, when it shows, like, the field is, like, the Xenoblade iconography, I guess it is.
Yeah.
Where he's like stood next to his sword and he's like looking out into the distance, and then this massive dragon thing just comes out. It reminded me of when I saw the Xenoblade Chronicles X trailer, when the when they showed you flying around in the mech for the first time. It just immediately made me interested.
Yeah.
That was like the last thing. How were you not interested before?
I was. No, but it, like, that was just like, okay, I'm interested already. But this, like, this just looks amazing.
I know what you mean. I mean, it was just a fantastic way to round off that trailer. Like, so many things about that looked incredible. The classic big world is, like, really immediately noticeable. But then just seeing so many different environments, the music, it just made me think, yep, these guys still have it. And even though I've not played much of X, I'm going to jump into this day one.
Hopefully it'll come out in 2017. Yes. It won't, because, you know, X came out last year.
Yeah, what was that, like four? It was the year before. It was, yeah, it was before the end of 2015. But,
oh, I'm a terrible person.
I think that, what was it? It was like 3 or 4 years between its reveal and launch. Hopefully we won't have the same way with this.
Hopefully.
I think an image Nintendo shared had it filed under kind of sometime 2017.
Yeah.
Which presumably means it's not been confirmed for a particular quarter, but they're hoping it might come in 2017. Yeah.
I think it's been confirmed for Japan for this year, but I guess it depends on how long they take translating it.
Yeah.
That's going to be the big thing. But the good thing is for people in the UK now, this is, well, stupid European languages, cinematler and country, whatever. But basically, if you think about it, if there is a little bit of a delay because of the European languages, you can now get the American version, which is really good for you guys.
Hopefully then, if this is a sequel to Xenoblade Chronicles that was on the Wii, we'll have the British voice actors back, because they're way better than crappy American voice actors.
I'll say this, the voice actors really helped make that game. I mean, Shulk, Ryan, Dunman, damn.
Well,
great
cast. Just quickly, I won't go into this too much, there was a reason why there was American voice actors, because the whole idea was it was an American ship, so...
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I didn't like the whole New Los Angeles thing. The fact that it was taking a real-world city was bad enough, but it felt really like New LA. Come on, like, are you as lazy as the people who made New York?
Or called New Donk.
New York? New Donk.
Yeah, but basically, the more modern aesthetic, I guess, of Chronicles X looked really cool. The normal aesthetic looked really cool. I know I've not played it, but I've always thought it looked really good. And this is going for a more classical JRPG setting of, like, fantasy, and I think that looks really cool as well. So I think they did a good job showing it off, even though they've only shown a little bit. And I, like, when they showed the Monolith Soft logo, I was like, oh my god, Monolith are making something already? Like, what are they making? And then it came up that it was Xenoblade 2, and I was like, wow, cool.
However,
I just didn't expect it.
However much I like the Xenoblade Chronicle games, I hope Monolith are not just going to be the Xenoblade Chronicles team. You know?
I think they've done other stuff.
See if they can make other things. But I know they've helped out on, like, they've helped with Breath of the Wild, haven't they? Hopefully they don't just turn out to be a team that is primarily for that specific game series. That's all.
It's mainly
something else as well.
It's mainly because of that's the history. Like, their product, they made the Xeno series, so it started, I think, with Xeno Cross on the PS1, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and then Gears.
Yeah, so... Oh, no, okay, their first one was Xenogears. That was their first game, Xenocross. I'm thinking of... I think it was a Final Fantasy game with Cross in the name. But the other thing they've made recently is they made the Project Crosszone series. They made Beaten Chaos. Kaitos. Got that wrong. I've always had that wrong, apparently. And they made a game called Somabringer on the DS, which was an RPG. So they have made some other things, but I think like the Xeno series is their roots, so I guess that's where they spent, like, I mean, Project Crosszone is really good. I don't know if they worked on the second one. I think they helped a little bit, but they didn't have as much of a leading role. And then obviously you got Baten Kaitos, which was really cool, but I never played it because it was one of those rarer GameCube games I could never find anywhere to buy.
I got it!
I always wanted to play it and bought it a few years after it came out for like 40 quid, and I thought, it's pricey, but I know they'll only go up. Never, ever played it, to my shame. I'll play it one day.
The crazy thing, just quickly, I'm not going to spend long on this. Basically, the thing that surprises me is, I don't know how accurate this is, but Wikipedia says that Monolithsoft has 109 employees as of June 2016, and it amazes me they can build games the scale of Xenoblade with that few employees. I guess they have the help of Nintendo as well, so it all comes down to like internal development, and that's not really interesting to most people, but I find software development interesting. Anyway,
that's kind of why I'm happy for Monolithsoft to continue making games like this, because I can't think of many JRPGs that have such big worlds and that you can freely explore. I mean, sure, you've got Western RPGs like Skyrim and Witcher, but in terms of JRPGs, just seeing the scale of Xenoblade was just awe-inspiring. Like, I played it on Dolphin first and totally forgot that it was a Wii game. And when I realized that, I really wondered how the hell anyone could have made such a big world on the Wii, and one that looked so good even after running it through Dolphin. But then I got the Wii version and played that on the Wii U, and even that looks good. It's not a shot, but it still looks impressive, especially when you consider what it ran on. So personally, I'd be happy if I wouldn't mind if Monolithsoft just kept making these big JRPGs, because someone needs to.
Draga, what's your thoughts on Ricky from Xenoblade Chronicles?
He's all right. He's not my favorite character, but I don't hate him.
But I do find him quite annoying at times.
He has his moments. He can provide some light relief, but he's also got his sincere moments. I like him, you know. He's good. He has variety. I'd miss him if he were gone. initially, I thought, like, what the hell is this guy? But yeah, he's good. And so when I see him in the final smashes in Smash Bros, I think, yep. It's not like I think, oh, why is this guy here? You should have put Ryan in it. So you're cool. So mine would have been really cool as well.
So we're getting a bit short on time now. So I think we've touched on some of like the big hitting, like some of the games which are I think a lot of people are going to be looking forward to, and which are kind of maybe going to be propping up that first maybe kind of 6 months or so of the Switch. Of course, there were a couple of other games. I know Shanker wanted to talk about Dragon Quest, and I think we wanted to touch on Travis Touchdown as well, but I think for the sake of brevity, we'll kind of acknowledge that they exist, but move on to kind of our next topic. So I'm about kind of halfway down my list, which I kind of ordered from good stuff to bad stuff, and we're getting onto stuff which maybe kind of, I found kind of disappointing, or I was kind of maybe a bit confused by. And one of the things which kind of bothered me about the presentation in retrospect was I don't feel necessarily that they spent enough time focusing on all of the games that they could have, or maybe the right games. I mean, they spent a lot of time on 1-2 Switch, and I know why they did it. You know, I know that they want it to be their kind of Wii Sports, or like kind of almost Nintendo Land-like equivalent, but maybe it didn't need as much time as it did. Maybe the EA guy didn't need to be stood up for as long as he was. What's his name? Is it like Suda51?
Suda51.
Suda, Carl. Yeah, sorry.
I watched the English stream because I couldn't find a link to the Japanese one. I didn't want to spoil myself because I was watching it first thing this morning. Basically, one of the funniest things was the translators were obviously given a script beforehand, and Suda51 just completely ignored what he was going to say,
and then
the translator couldn't keep up with it, and I felt really bad for the guy.
This won't make it into the final podcast, but the translator audibly sighed. It was like really sad.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Like it was just like this guy Suda51. He was just like talking, you know, and kind of mumbling, and like I could tell, like obviously I don't speak Japanese, but you can kind of just tell that he was like beginning a sentence, trailing off, and talking about something else. And like the translator literally went, "I heard him."
Yeah.
It cracked me up.
That was awful. But yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to cut all of that and resume my sentence. I'm going to get the pronunciation right so the steer doesn't laugh at me. Suda51.
No, Suma.
Suma. I don't play his games, so I don't really know much about
I can't blame you for not knowing his name. I mean, even if you play someone's games, how often do you know
about
the developers?
Exactly.
Like, it's a fair mistake to make, so call him Suma. And kick the game, shut up.
No way. Okay.
All right.
We're going to do it. So, oh God, what was I even saying now? You guys are really throwing me.
It's going to have to be Suda 51.
We were talking about...
We were discussing Splatoon 2?
Suda 51, you know, his segment could have been, you know, better rehearsed. You know, these... And if you kind of made some more time, maybe you could have shown off some more games that people would have been kind of more interested in. And maybe the interpretation of the launch period and kind of that, like, 6 to 9 month period, you know, the kind of information that we have on it being what it is, maybe the kind of interpretation of that might have been a bit different if there had been, like, more focus on actual games in the presentation itself. It would have maybe seemed less fair, even though, obviously, the timetable for the games being launched would be the same.
The interesting point to make about that is the fact that in the presentation, Kinoshima said, I think there was 80 titles in development, and we barely saw any. And I think the idea behind showing off those people on stage was, look, these big-name developers are making stuff for the console, and I just dropped a pair of scissors, but that's fine. It's like, oh, Suda51's back, and he's making this cool game with Travis in again, and then Suda51 then didn't actually explain what this was, and he said there's no title yet. So it's like, it's clearly very early on in development, and Suda51 is so cool that he probably doesn't even know what he's doing. And the worst one of those was definitely the FIFA guy, because the Japanese people there from Nintendo were being quite corporate, but they were being corporate in a fun way. Like Koizumi, who was the main guy who did like most of the emceeing throughout the whole thing, he was just really funny. But you had this EA guy who came and spoke about FIFA, and he said the most bullshit stuff I've ever heard in terms of, he's obviously some kind of manager, because he is a king of management speak. Like, half of the stuff he said was, he was saying stuff that no reasonable normal human being would ever say outside of like a
Cuban.
Normal Cuban being, yeah. Basically, I just felt really bad for Bill, because the FIFA guy was way too corporate for the, and it sort of threw me off, because until then the whole presentation was all sort of upbeat. Like, Kinoshima was kind of like hard-nosed, but I think that's just who he is. He's a very business-orientated man. But, well, in comparison to like someone like Iwata, who was more development side. But then you just had this EA guy who was just awful. He just threw me off completely.
Most of the segment was good, but the Sega guy was a bit weak. I mean, he didn't really have much to say, and the way he was saying it didn't really engage interest. But I agree, the worst was definitely the EA guy, because not only was he speaking corporate rubbish that is just like, you can just kind of see him just trying to hit these keywords, and given the what we've seen of EA support of like the Wii U, you can't really have faith in what he's saying. But this is the fact that he did it so uncharismatically and so boringly. It's just like, you're spouting rubbish and you're doing it in such a weak way that it's like, there's two reasons why I want you to shut up before you send me back to sleep. Or just get out. So that was definitely the, you know, I'm not a big fan of, and I'm getting ahead of myself, at the online component, but this EA guy still managed to outdo that in terms of the worst bit of that whole conference. That was just abysmal.
When you mentioned the Sega guy, what they could have done is come with a trailer for Sonic Mania, a new one, and said this is also coming to Switch, because it is. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, he more just came out and said, I'm really looking forward to developing new ideas on the Switch. Because, I mean, Sega have been pretty good with sort of developing quirky games. I mean, look at the Dreamcast, there's so many good games on it which are just completely off the wall. But, like, with Bill and the EA guy, like, he was translating, but most of the time he wasn't even translating literally. He just basically added stuff because it didn't make any sense. Because obviously I had the thing of understanding what Bill was saying in Japanese and also what this fucking EA guy was saying. And it's all best sport in the world. The one thing about the EA thing, quickly, is I can't work out if they're saying that this is going to be a fully featured FIFA game. I mean, I don't care about FIFA, but one of the biggest problems people have had with the Wii and the Wii U is the FIFA game. I don't even know if there was one for the Wii U, but with the Wii, it was a FIFA game which was like an upport of the PS2 one, which was just awful. So it makes me wonder if this is going to be a fully featured version of the newest FIFA, or if they are developing an entirely specific, this is Switch FIFA, this is how it's different, but it's still good, rather than, we've put 5 minutes effort into this, it's kind of FIFA, you may as well get the other version on PC, Xbox One, or PS4. Because if they do that, it's going to be the same situation the Wii U had, where developers like outside of Nintendo just don't seem to give a shit. And then when their games don't sell, they give up support, and it's just like, you're idiots.
That is unfortunately what's going to happen. I've read that the Switch version of FIFA is based on the 360 and PS3 versions, which are still being made. So this self-defeating cycle has already come into effect. I mean, we saw with the Wii U, there was potential for porting 360 and PS3 games. Like, we got Mass Effect 3 and Arkham Knight and Need for Speed, though they came out quite late. But Need for Speed was still the best console version. But there's no reason other stuff like GTA couldn't come to the Wii U, because they had 360 and PS3 versions. So it's just engaging those companies to bring the games. And there's still like there's still companies making games for the Xbox One, and the Switch doesn't seem to be a far cry away from that. So it should still be possible to get modest ports of Xbox One games, but that is clearly not happening. And so you've got the same cycle again. No one's making games, so the console won't sell. And so people don't want to make games because the console's not selling. But it's just a big cycle of stupidity.
You say that, but isn't it just saying that they don't really have confidence in it? They didn't have confidence in the Wii U. They don't have confidence in that support.
Yeah.
There's two sides.
You can say that, but that that's not just the be all and end all. I mean, you can have not. They don't have confidence in the Wii in the Switch. They didn't have confidence in the Wii U. But that's not to say it's completely Nintendo's fault. I think that this third party segment had some strengths, but it also had some weaknesses. And having in the first reveal, we had a picture with a number of developers and publishers' names. But now, when it comes to this conference, we've got a handful of them, a lot of which are just talking about games they're going to make, not giving examples. I mean, even with something like a port of, say, Deus Ex or Dishonored, even if it's just really, like, if it's less than an Xbox version, or even smaller games like Rocket League. I mean, we've seen Shovel Knight is going to come to the Switch. What about Rocket League? I mean, that's done fantastically on the PlayStation and PC. And if they could get...
Rocket League hasn't done as well on the bone, purely cross-play. Cross-play is the big thing, I think.
Cross-play on PC and Xbox One, isn't it?
No, is PS4 it? And PC, I think. Or have they changed it? It used to be just PS4 and PC.
No, I'm sure it is now. They were on about doing it when it came out, but I don't know if they did do it. I assume they've done it now.
Maybe. I've been playing Rocket League recently, and I've not come across any Xbox One people, so maybe it's just...
Anyway, the main point is Rocket League would be a great game to put onto the Switch, but why are the developers not jumping on that chance? And like I said, we saw so many names in that picture, but you'd have thought that at least a few more of them would have something ready, even if it's just a modest port of the Xbox version of the games. Or why not announce more things for the Switch? Like, we've got Kingdom Hearts coming out on PS4 soon. Kingdom Hearts 3 is coming to Xbox, but you know, JRPGs seem to be doing terribly on that, so I can't really blame Square for abandoning the Xbox. But you know, I know Square is bringing I like the game, but I already forget the name. What was the name of the game?
Octopath,
yes, thank you. So Square's bringing Project Octopath to the Switch, and that looks fantastic. But what harm would a port of 1.5 and 2.5 HD do, or even 2.8, or even announcing a version
of
3?
We'll soon find out. Thing is, they're not going to announce anything until they feel ready to, even if it is coming. Like, that's the big thing of today. Like, I personally thought, for what it was, the presentation was pretty good. But I know online a lot of people are like, oh, the world is ending, they've not shown enough. And it's like, it's literally day one of the reveal. Just wait. You don't often get every single piece of information in one day. That's never going to happen, whether you want it to or not. That's not how companies work. They're going to... There's, I think it's 49 days, maybe, until the Switch comes out. And they're going to be probably releasing info all the way up until the release day. So, obviously, your first impression is important, and people are a little bit disappointed. But I think people should hold fire on saying, this is the worst day ever, or there's no games coming to Switch, when not everyone has introduced everything yet.
I think that, well, I think that we should see things being introduced at a quicker pace, and that there should have been more shown at during the conference, because there were really weak bits like the Sega guy and the EA guy that could have been replaced with stronger bits, like even like the Bomberman trailer or the Mario Kart trailer or something completely new. Ultimately, like you said, the Switch is less than 50 days away, so you know, fair enough, you can't have all the information in one day at one moment, but at the same time, we should be having a lot more information if there are going to be more games coming out at launch. This is like the time to, like, the iron's been made hot, so strike it.
Yeah, but
get
I'll
those
say...
games out there so people pre-ordering the consoles will pre-order the games at the same time.
I'll say one thing that... I'll just say one thing and then I'll let other people talk, because I've spoken a lot and this is what Pete was saying. But the big thing is, this is the way I've always looked at it. I studied media for 6 or 7 years or something, and one of the points I like studied in quite heavily was how, like, I looked into sort of the news media. And one of the things is, if they announce everything now, then when you look, say for example, there's a site called Silicon Era who show usually Japanese game news, but they show a lot of American stuff now as well. There's like 3 pages of Switch news today of different articles of stuff that's been announced. Now, if you had more announced, there'd be more, and then part of it would get lost. Whereas if you keep drip-feeding information, while I don't think it's the best way, I think, like, I want all the information now, but for Nintendo as a business, if they drip-feed the information, news websites are going to be talking about them every day, rather than, like, a blowout now, and then it doesn't get mentioned for 2 months. It's a weird way of doing it, but I understand why. It's why I think the directs work so well, because it keeps Nintendo in the media attention a lot more often than if they just blow everything out at E3 and that's the only information we get. It just keeps them active in social media as well.
Surely tech media doesn't really work like that. If you think of like Apple events or like Google events, they're big sort of 1, maybe 2 day things where you get all the information at once and you know what's going to happen and that's it. I mean,
that's hardware though.
Well, this is hardware.
It is, but in terms of the actual console, like the specification of the hardware itself, we know everything. Like, we know exactly what features the controllers have. They've shown us in detail all the different sensors and whatever they've got. They've spoken about how the Switch actually works as a console. Yes, they still haven't gone fully into fleshing out the operating system, but that's something that even with Google, for example, on Android, when they first showed off Android, they didn't show everything in one go. They did show most of it, but it started off as a phone OS, so you're going to have a lot of the same stuff. And I mean, yeah, there's probably going to be a lot of the same stuff on the Switch from the Wii U, but it's more in terms of software, you'll slowly see it drip-fed is what I mean. Like, admittedly, they needed to do a better job today of explaining exactly how the operating system works, how the online system works. But Kirishima did say in his interview, in the conference even, that we would be hearing about that more over the next couple of days. So I would imagine that by the end of next week, we'll know exactly how the online system works, but that's just a guess.
A lot of people are just going to make up their mind today, and there's a lot of negative information that Nintendo presented, so they're just going to go, this probably isn't for me, and probably not pay attention to if they say, oh, by the way, you know, this thing, we've changed this, or this thing, we didn't say about this.
Actually, well, I don't think that everyone will completely write it off. I mean, you saw what happened to the Xbox One when that was shown at E3 in 2013, but then it's still far outpaced the Wii U. Now, fair enough, the PS4 is still decimating both of those consoles. It still showed that things can be swung around, and we saw how the PS3 went from $599 to a very viable contender of the Xbox One. And I'll agree with James's point that drip feeding information is a good way to stay in the attention of the media and consumers, but then there's a fine line between that and
thing is you need a package. Really good hook to drip feed. You need a good hook to bait them in first, and I don't think Nintendo have done that today. I don't think there was. I think, unfortunately,
the hook is the system. That's the whole thing.
the system isn't on its own without the right software and a good enough lineup isn't much. You know, what's the point of having a console if you've got nothing to play on it?
Yeah, well, the hooks are
the system, Zelda, Splatoon, Mario, and the Mario Kart game that's deemed the best that only 4 or 5 million people played compared to however many gamers there are and who would want to play it. It's a combination of unrealistic expectations of having the world in one go, and also just I think that there's enough of a hook. It's just it could have been a better hook.
The hook is
it could have been like kind of communicated better, couldn't it? Because I think people would have less of an issue if it was made like extremely clear, like it was made explicit. If Nintendo said, look, we're gonna share with you like a selection of some of our games, but it's not the entire launch lineup. We'll be drip feeding that over the next week. If they like, I know it would come across as kind of hammy, but I think the reaction would have been better if they had literally said those words that I just said.
Yeah.
People might have been kind of annoyed, oh, they're drip feeding announcements. It would be like a bit of banter, but no one would think that it was the entire lineup. At the moment, as far as we know, it is the entire like first 9 month lineup in that image that they shared on Twitter. Now, I think that's kind of unlikely. I think there will be more games coming out in that period, but we don't know because they haven't been terribly clear about how they're going to get that information across before launch.
There is two sides to that, where one side you look at it from a consumer standpoint, you don't know everything, and that is disappointing, and that's also it's bad for marketing. Obviously, the big marketing hook with this is the whole Switch with the click. Like, that's going to be a really pivotal tool in, I think, their marketing campaign. But I mean, even looking today, the amount of misinformation that's being spread over nothing is insane. Like, there's a thread on NeoGAF, which is obviously another forum from grcade.com or .co.uk, but someone posted this massive list about the online features, right? And only two of the things he said do we even know about yet. So, like, about 10 pages of replies, because NeoGAF is such a busy forum, were people quoting and discussing with this guy. But it's like, what he was saying, you don't even know if that's true. So how can you make a decision on that when he's talking bullshit, for all we know,
okay,
until it's confirmed. Then
we'll see about what online, right? What?
Yeah, I'm just going to say, what do we know about the online, then?
The only thing we do know that there's literally one thing we know, well, two, that it's paid.
Yeah.
Right, after the first few months, we know that, and we know what features come with the online, and we know there's going to be an app of some kind which will allow you to chat and use voice chat and things through your smartphone.
Which is stupid. Why do you need a friggin' phone app? Why do I need to use my phone?
Wait.
If I want to make a phone call.
Okay, no. This
I know it's not literally a phone call, but it's stupid. It's a stupid system. You should be able to just do it straight away on your freaking Switch.
People are basically tied to their phones these days. Like, when we were playing Splatoon, for example, and we were using Mumble on our phones, and I was using it from my PC, people had, like, even the people who weren't on voice chat were saying they were looking at stuff on their phone in between games. Like, people are tied to their phones in these days, so it being on the phone not only gives you an advent of doing it because you already have the device with you, but it also means when you're out and about on the go, which I don't think many people have thought about this, you can chat to people who are playing games, like your friends or something. You can use it as like this social platform from your phone.
People aren't looking at the big picture and they're thinking, I'm sat at home, why do I need to use my phone? That's a fair point. And then this ties back into what Carl said. Nintendo hasn't explained everything and it probably should. Can we use our own headsets when we're at home? We should be able to. I really hope we can. That's one thing. Another thing is when you're out and about and you're playing and you want to play online, maybe you're tethering to your phone, or you're somewhere with free and reliable Wi-Fi, or just have reliable Wi-Fi, say you're at work. Anyway, when you're in those places and you're outside of home, but you want to play online, you can do it, and you want to talk to the people you're playing with and your friends, you can do it, because when you're out, you're almost certainly going to also have your phone, and you can use that. You're not necessarily going to carry a headset around with you in case you want to play Splatoon online or Mario Kart online, but you're damn sure likely to be carrying your phone, and that's the point. You can then use that phone to talk to whomever you're playing with.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I actually agree that that is a good thing about it. But that should be in a, like, from what they said, is use your phone to chat and send invites. You should be able to do that straight from the console,
okay,
in addition to an app. Like, yeah, there's an app for the PlayStation 4, there's an app for the Xbox One, why can't there be an app as well?
This is where the hyperbole comes in, and as Carl rightly put it, their lack of explaining things, because we don't know if that's not on the OS of the Switch yet.
We don't, but when
we can't say if it is or not.
No, I know, but when they say, if you want to invite your friends, you use your phone, when they say, also use your phone.
Well, it's just, the thing is, A, that could have been the way it was translated. Like, when I was watching the video, I didn't catch Kirishima's voice too much, because it in the English one, they didn't mute the Japanese voices, but they lowered them a bit. But, it could just be it's just the way it's been worded. It's coming down to context of a conversation, and this is where misinformation spreads, because we don't know. Like, the way I look at it, they were maybe just explaining what the benefits of the app are. Like, you can do this on your phone. Like, they didn't say you can't do this on your Switch. That's where the problem comes in. You can't jump on this bandwagon of nothing is gonna do, like, you can't invite your friends on the Switch, this is shit. You don't know that. Why are you saying you can't? You have no evidence.
But you have no evidence to prove that you can.
Exactly. So why
there you
are we
go.
Arguing?
I can still be annoyed that the fact is that there's a chance that I'm not able to invite my friends and talk to my friends on the Switch. You
there's
cannot deny the fact that there is that chance.
Lack of communication has wrecked havoc today.
It comes down to lack of communication.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that... I think you had a really good point there. It was one that I hadn't considered, that they probably do want to keep some stuff back so that over the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, leading up to kind of pre-launch period, they can stay in the news and, you know, still have some articles, still have some reveals that are going to get people more excited. But you can't... I think what is on them and what was a mistake was half mentioning some of these things without the promise of clarification later. You know, people are, unless you say, I haven't finished explaining this yet, so, you know, give us a couple of days and we'll have all the details out there, then people will wait. And I know that I know
they did say that pretty much.
I know that they mentioned quite close to the start, I seem to remember they were saying, oh, you know, there'll be a treehouse and so forth. I do recall that. But I feel like if this is going to be your strategy, it makes good sense to be really explicit while you're talking about it. So if you're going to take the example of, like, the online features, don't just say, like, oh, there's going to be, like, a paid-for online system. And then just go on to the next topic. Say, there'll be a paid-for online system, and on, I don't know, Tuesday of next week, there will be a direct explaining how it works and why you should buy it and why it's going to be good value for money for you. And you just need that second clause on that sentence. Yeah. And the reaction would have been entirely different from kind of people on Twitter and NeoGAF and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, they did say that you will hear more in the coming days, well, not in the coming days, but they said in the coming, like, period of time. But taking it back to something that we've not actually mentioned, that probably won't come up in detail, which is fine, the only thing they showed of Fire Emblem Warriors, or Fire Emblem Musou, whatever, if you're into the proper name, they didn't show pretty much anything in the trailer. Like, there was no gameplay. They did show a few weapons, and if you're a fan of the series, you knew what they were. But they explicitly said in the treehouse today, well, they announced it, which is something that's really cool. Next week, there's going to be a Fire Emblem Direct, which is, like, cool. And it is one of those things that maybe they could have done it with some of the OS features as well, like you said, and it would have been better. But we're going to see gameplay there. They'll probably show off Fire Emblem Mobile for the first time, which is going to be, from what I understand, an SRPG like the normal games. So, I mean, that's something to look forward to as well.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds great, and that's the kind of communication which I think is really helpful from both their perspective and from the consumer's perspective, because now anyone who's thinking, oh, I'm interested in Fire Emblem Warriors, they know when to tune back in, they know where to go looking for that information, and I think if you know that you're going to be informed, you stop worrying about it. It's not something you're not going to be sat there theory crafting and, like, getting upset and thinking, oh, you know, Fire Emblem Warriors is going to be shit because they only showed a sword and blah blah blah. You're not going to be thinking things like that. You'll just be thinking, oh, okay, I look forward to the Fire Emblem Direct, you know, next week. And I think if there was more of that, like, kind of explicit communication, we could have been looking at a completely different feeling from the presentation. And what really frustrates me here is that it was kind of like a so close yet so far thing, because they had some of the components of a decent presentation there. The game trailers that they showed were great. You know, the actual gameplay footage that kind of came out of it, I was really excited about. It's just they spent too much time not properly explaining other things.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the conference could have been done with like an extra hour, but then it comes down to I guess it's that really fine balance of too much information and not enough, because too much information, people get bored, not enough, people get worried that it's not going to happen. And then I think they tried to find the middle ground, but they maybe skewed it a little bit too much to there's not enough information here. And I do understand.
It didn't need more information per se. It's just that a lot of the time was wasted with bad information. And I don't mean to keep harping on about it, but the Sega guy and the EA guy, examples of things that could have been taken out and replaced with more interesting pieces.
Well, they had their purpose because they were showing the games media, if anything. Look, these are the third parties.
No one in their right mind believes that EA is really going to support the Switch in a meaningful way after that guy said those things in that manner.
Yeah, but it's their attempt of going, look, there are some third parties that care this time. And I know they tried that with the Wii.
It would have been better not to have the EA guy, because it literally it clearly says, look, EA's bullshitting again. Okay,
yeah, it was their way of trying to go, look, we got FIFA now. FIFA's big. It's like Madden showing up at every Xbox conference, right? You just know it's going to be there now because Madden is just like the dude bro game in America.
But that's different. That's the best version of Madden. That's not a poor version of Madden.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Like,
yeah,
everyone was expecting a poor version of FIFA, and this was like vindicated later on.
I guess the thing is, they were looking for third-party people to come. They got the guy from Sega. I've forgotten his name. They got Suda51. And then they thought, we need someone who can show off a game. The person who I think they should have replaced the FIFA guy with is Ono, because Ono was there, and they announced Ultra Street Fighter 2.
Oh my god, yes. Why the hell was that not there?
Like, that could have been in place of FIFA, but I guess the thing is, at the end of the day, when you compare the two games, yes, it may not be the final version. And okay, I know a lot of people are disappointed with the look of the new Street Fighter. I mean, after the Treehouse stuff, people are a little bit more excited again, which is why the Treehouse is so good.
Let's be honest, though. The people watching this conference, specifically, are more likely to be wowed by Ultra Street Fighter 2 than FIFA.
No, but it's the whole thing of... Like, this is where the whole E3 versus Direct thing comes in. Of a big conference like this... isn't just targeted at the games media.
I know that, but I'm just saying, you know, like the people who were up watching there and...
I'm going to have to be with Kickstarter because I was listening to radio, to 5 Live, like immediately after this. And...
I mean, I completely agree that it was worthwhile to have a statement from EA there saying, we're going to make FIFA, because I agree completely with you that it serves like almost a political purpose. Like, no one that knows anything about games cares, because you know it's going to be bad, and you know that it's not the target audience of the Switch anyway. You know, if you want to play FIFA, you already know where to get FIFA, right? But it serves like a political purpose of like informing people, like, you know, we've expended the bare minimum effort to get like EA to say that they're going to make a FIFA game, and it means that we're not being like completely written off by all third parties. I get that that's important to do, but I feel like that segment could have been a much more efficient and like impressive segment if it had just been, I don't know, I'm just throwing ideas out there, and obviously, you know, I'm not like a marketer, but it could have been short pre-recorded clips played one after the other of, you know, these developers going, hi, I'm EA guy and I'm gonna make a FIFA game for Switch. Hi, I'm Sega guy and I'm gonna make a Sonic game for Switch. Hi, I'm Suda51 and I'm gonna make a No More Heroes game for Switch. And it could have been like much more efficient. And it would have like left more time to actually talk about games. I mean, if you look at the games which kind of either weren't mentioned or were kind of confined to that like kind of trailer montage kind of towards the end. I mean, you had Mario Kart in the like trailer montage. They didn't give it any time to kind of actually talk about what was in Mario Kart. And I mean, I thought that one was particularly silly because that's going to be, you know, Mario Kart is going to be one of the reasons why people might invest in your online service. So you want to put that out there. You want to like convince people Mario Kart's going to be good. Yeah, absolutely. But you also had
should have showed some more of that. I agree with what you're saying, Carl. I'm just agreeing with him.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have Bomberman, which wasn't really shown properly.
Yeah.
Disgaea, people are going to be like pretty excited about. They could have even dropped Pokemon and Metroid hints. They could have dropped the hints even if they didn't want to like kind of confirm what the details were, and it would have excited people.
The other game that's missing is Pikmin 4. Miyamoto said last year that's really nearly finished, and they didn't mention it. That I think that's going to be one of their big E3 games, though, along with probably Retro's game.
Yeah, Retro's game. The fact that no Retro game was mentioned was a big disappointment for me. Like, even if they bring out another Donkey Kong Country, while I want them to do something else, that would still excite me because Returns and Tropical Freeze is awesome.
I think one of the things that Nintendo has in their bag is nostalgia. They can sort of cash in on 20, 30 years worth of these franchises that everyone loved playing as, you know, when they were younger, tend to like still. I think a lot of what has gone right for Nintendo in the past little while, like say their move to mobile and their massive success of like Pokemon Go and Super Mario Run, say, oh, do you remember this? And people go, yes, I love that. I want more of that. I think if they showed some of that classic stuff, like Metroid, you know, like you say, dropped a hint of Metroid, Pikmin 4, like you're saying, James, you know, it was basically, it should be done. To not have that there is kind of bizarre. But for me, the ultimate thing is, if they dropped any hint of F-Zero, a lot of the negativity for me would be almost instantly dismissed. Now, I know, like, F-Zero is just not going to happen anymore, but it's just that kind of thing. I think a lot of the negativity people have would be dismissed if a lot more of that sort of nostalgia was at the forefront. Because the thing that people have liked about this event, you know, we've said, is Zelda and Mario, that they're main things.
The interesting thing is, though, even though it's not been confirmed, and it probably won't be confirmed, and this is me basing entirely on speculation, the day before... I guess this probably didn't help with F-Zero's case. The day before this big event, they put up F-Zero X on the Virtual Console in America, and they made quite a big deal out of it.
I refuse to believe anymore. I had a small hope when it's it was 200cc, but that's it.
Yeah,
I was foolish down. To ever believe that. This series Retro. Died with GX, and then it died again with the last GBA game. It's so dead.
You know
it's
what?
Not coming back.
You know what? Retro. I can't put any money on this, right? Retro are making the next F-Zero, and that is my guess.
No, it's bullshit. Retro is not making it. F-Zero is never coming back.
It is.
It's not coming back. It didn't sell well in 2003 when we had the best.
Neither did Zelda.
Of it ever.
Like, Zelda doesn't sell well either, but they make a Zelda game every other
year.
No,
but it still sells 7 million copies, and they don't make a Zelda game every year. They make it every few years.
No, I said every few years, every other year.
Fine. Point is, F-Zero GX was a bomb, and it was one of the best bombs ever. It's so dead, and Metroid's nearly dead as well. I'm surprised we saw Federation Force, but they don't sell, and this is business. They're not coming back. I'm really glad that Fire Emblem Awakening was such a success, because I'd hated to see that go the same way, and it so nearly did.
The thing is, Shankar, I'm kind of worried about how any of this is going to sell in the next like year or two. So when it's like that, and where Nintendo made so much money with, say, the Wii and a few other things, I kind of think, should sales really matter as much? You know, if they're doing things this badly, they should almost recognize that and go, you know what, let's just like just do whatever, you know, those weird like niche titles that people want. They should recognize themselves as sort of a niche platform, because I think that is sort of where it's going to go with this.
That's kind of what it has done. But remember, the 3DS launched terribly, and that was turned around to become something that sold, despite the prevalence of mobile gaming, over 50 or 60 million units. And a lot of that came from focusing in 2013 on 3DS games. So fair enough, we've got a really slow start to the Switch, and that's really baffling given how slow the 3DS and Wii U have been over the last year or so. It's possible to still turn around, given that the focus is of Nintendo should just be on this one piece of hardware. But
it's so that's why I think it's disappointing, but it's not a final nail in the coffin. It's just a you guys better have an ace up your sleeve.
Yeah.
But I just don't, and I think that the aces that Nintendo does have or can have won't include stuff like F-Zero or Metroid or Advance Wars. I mean, fair enough, we saw Kid Icarus come back after 20 or so years, but that was just one game. We've seen F-Zero come and go many times, and the best one didn't sell well, so I can't blame Nintendo for not putting money into that. And at this point, I'm just going to put my hope in there in an action adventure Kid Icarus game, because I love the little short cartoons that were done and Palutena and Pitt's voice acting in Smash Bros. So I'll put my hopes in seeing more of that before another F-Zero or Metroid. Those aren't coming back. I hate to say it, but you have to be realistic. It's been how many years? It's let's just look forward to a new Kid Icarus and Half-Life 3.
Well, I think you raised a really interesting point there with having an ace up your sleeve, some big bang that's going to get the system kind of kick-started.
The Nintendo Megaton.
The Nintendo Megaton, indeed. And I think one very interesting omission they had was you think of what Nintendo's most popular franchises are. You've got Zelda there at launch. You got Mario there at like Christmas, and that's like their second chance, you know? Marketing push at Christmas, you can have a slow start, but then that's the first Christmas. You got this brilliant Mario game coming out. That's like chance number two to like get the Switch off with a bang. Chance number three, and I think probably their final chance, you know, if this doesn't do it, nothing will be sometime in 2018, big release of a new Pokemon.
Yeah,
that's
Pokemon that will I think shift consoles. I reckon so many kids be going, "Mommy, Daddy, give me my Pokemon."
We saw what Pokemon Go did to the world and what it did to Sun and Moon. So
yeah,
I think
what it did to the marketing.
Hell, even what it did to the 2DS and Pokemon like Ruby, Sapphire, X, and Y when Go was out and hot. A new Pokemon game. So given that. What's her name? The leaker.
That's the one. Yeah.
Laura. So Laura even though, so now that she's been discredited and we can just forget about Pokemon Stars, I think that you're right here, Carl. 2018 with the whole new Pokemon game is what if Splatoon 2 and Super Mario haven't done this already, this is what will kick the Switch into the mainstream and really light it on fire. And we saw 2013 was the year of so many 3DS games. That could be the start of, well, next 2018 with Pokemon could be the start of so many Switch games. It's a terrible, you know, it's really bad that it's not happening this year, but hey, best alternative, I guess, that could happen now, unless we get a huge ass direct on Monday.
I do wonder if, Pokemon Go's success is, it seemed to catch Nintendo by surprise. I don't think they're ready to jump on that, apart from what they had for 3DS in Sun and Moon. I don't think they're ready to sort of go, what they really want is the Switch version to be the big, big game that's going to be like the best one ever, and just really go from there. I don't think they were ready for it.
I think they were, because when you, especially in the UK, when you look at the marketing push in the UK for Sun and Moon, one of the prominent things in the tube posters in London, I was speaking to Dalla about this, but one of the biggest things other than the game title on that poster was a Metro quote from a guy who wrote a review of Pokemon Go for the Metro, saying for Sun and Moon even, saying the perfect follow-up to Pokemon Go.
Yeah,
now that is one very simple line, but it's got such a huge impact.
Sure, that's just marketing for a game that was already in development. I'm talking about like going from that success and using that success to change what game they're going to make.
Well, we don't know if Pokemon Stars is even a thing yet, so we don't even know if they were developing it when Pokemon Go came out. They could have been, they may not have been.
I think that his point is Nintendo isn't ready to develop, well, to have a Pokemon game on the Switch and what comes with that, as in it's inevitable that there will be one, but will Nintendo be able to market in the best way or make enough consoles or copies of the game? I mean, between Go and Sun and Moon, 3DS sales shot up and
price and the health of the console itself actually went out of stock in a lot of places before Christmas, and the games got a lot more expensive after release because the demand was higher as you just picked up as you got close to Christmas. So, you know, this is a great ace Nintendo has up its sleeve, but will it be able to capitalize on it?
Yeah, absolutely. And really, I think if they want to send the Switch into the stratosphere, what they really need is about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months before the new Pokemon on the Switch, which a year is inevitable. They want some kind of big Pokemon Go kind of kick, remind people that was a thing, or at least get Pokemon back into like the mainstream consciousness kind of any way they can. And then try to recreate, I think, that kind of combo, which made Pokemon Sun so much more successful than it would have been like by itself. I mean, that would turn the new Pokemon into like a real incredible system seller, like it kind of has been for the 3DS, but maybe wasn't capitalized on fully because of Nintendo's like classic like stock issues, like, you know, maybe occasionally good, but like fundamentally maybe inconsistent marketing. I mean, all of that needs to be like spot on if they're banking on giving, you know, the Switch a kind of, you know, we're a year and a half in and we want, you know, we really want to kick it up now.
But did today's presentation suggest that's going to happen to you?
No, not really.
Right.
Yeah, no. And that's the concern. That's, you know, it's a huge concern that Nintendo just haven't learned from any of the lessons they've been taught from the Wii U's failure, from unexpected successes which have come from you know, using smart devices and how that's, you know, impacted the 3DS. I sometimes get the impression they don't even really understand why the Wii was successful at all.
Yeah, I think that too, Carl. Yeah, I definitely think they put something out, something different. They weren't ready for that to take off the way it did, and they couldn't capitalize on it again. It's like catching lightning in a bottle, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're kind of finishing up on a kind of depressing note there. But I think we all hope, kind of earnestly. I mean, I know we're all kind of huge Nintendo fans, huge fans of games, and I think we all hope that the Switch is successful and that Nintendo find a way for it to not be a disappointment, whether it's through, you know, more information coming out pre-launch, you know, resulting in it having like a more consistent, like maybe timetable of game releases. That would certainly be a step in the right direction, or whether it gets going kind of, you know, a year after launch with a big Pokemon game or something like that. I hope we all hope. I know that we all hope that happens. And certainly the quality of the software seems to be there. So I think that they have a fighting chance if they can sort out some of these communication issues and just get like a consistent stream of games going. I don't see why it couldn't be successful and couldn't be a really great console. So I wanted to end on that kind of positive note. But there was stuff to be hopeful there, and you know, I mean, I know about you guys, but I'm personally still definitely going to buy a Switch, even though I found today somewhat disappointing.
Well,
I've got 5 pre-ordered.
I have. Like, until they confirm whether or not I can use my Japanese account and access the Japanese store on my UK one, I'll probably import. But at the minute, I've already got one ordered at Amazon UK just in case. So,
I think to. Just to show how disappointing this was, from the October like little snippet teaser trailer thing, I was quite ready to get one at launch based on like the detail that we'd see today. Now I don't know if I'm gonna get one for the next year. That, you know, to go from one thing to the other with in that kind of extreme with that disappointment, I didn't want that to happen.
It's become something you might pick up at Christmas maybe or something like that. Yeah.
I think if there's like, you know, that Mario Zelda 1-2 for a certain price at Christmas, that will probably entice me in.
Yeah, I think that's the end of our very in-depth Switch conference discussion. This has been like a a really long recording for us. So although I haven't done this in previous podcasts, I just want to really thank everyone here, everyone that recorded this with me, for bearing with it for 2 hours and 10 minutes of footage, which I'll hopefully cut down, and a solid half an hour of like prep beforehand as well, where we discussed what we wanted to discuss. So thank you guys so much for that.
No problem.
Thank you for having us.
Cheers, Carl.
So those of you listening to this, all six or seven of you, I hope you'll I hope you enjoyed this, and I hope you'll join me in a couple of weeks' time for season 2, episode 5 of the GRK podcast. Thank you very much. If you have any feedback at all, please log on to grk.co.uk, leave it in the podcast thread. I'd be absolutely thrilled to hear your feedback. Thank you very much. And good night.
Goodbye.
Good night.
Bye.
Goodbye.